Driver, we're clear.
Hello, friends, and welcome to this week's episode of The Florida Project, the podcast where Disney fans celebrate Walt Disney World. If you like Disney and you like podcasts, you'll probably like The Florida Project. My name is Will. Across from me is Jason.
Hello, Will.
Hello, Jason.
This is my voice.
Yeah.
Jason. Welcome aboard.
And as always, next to both of us is Michael.
Hi, guys.
That's Michael's voice. Said Jason, which is me.
If you'd like to support the show, get access to some awesome bonus content, and hang out with us on our Patreon exclusive Slack channel, become one of our Patreon saints at patreon.com/TFP podcast. All of our Patreon saints get ad-free versions of the podcast, as well as access to two additional shows, TFP Extra,
Extra.
And Disney Classics. Each week on TFP Extra, we keep the podcast train rolling with more zany fun, the airing of grievances, and a topic that may or may not be Disney-related. On the monthly Disney Classic series, we watch and discuss each of Disney's animated classic films. We're recording the next classic, The Emperor's New Groove, this week, and it should be available soon. Additional levels and rewards are all on the Patreon site, so sign up at patreon.com/TFP podcast today and get more of The Florida Project. And we did just have a new sign up this week.
We did.
Welcome aboard, Danielle.
Yeah. Hey, Danielle. We're glad to have you.
Thank you.
Enjoy the back catalog.
In today's episode, we'll discuss some nonsense and small topics. Michael will give us the latest news. I will not take us on a trip down Main Tweet USA. And then we'll shine the spotlight on Walt Disney World's newest attraction, Tron, Light Cycle Run. All of that and more is coming up on this week's episode of The Florida Project.
It's a small
topic.
After all, it's a small
topic.
After all, it's a small
topic.
After all, it's a small,
small topics.
If you could live in any video game world for 1 week, which would it be? And why? I'm currently playing Hogwarts Legacy. I'd go live in there.
That's dangerous.
It is the 1800s, but I feel like that they probably have magical air conditioning in that castle.
Now, would you be a muggle, a squib, or magical?
No, I'd be magical. Okay. I'd be a wizard at Hogwarts specifically.
I'd like to go to the American Hogwarts, whatever that's called.
Illaverney or something?
I'd like to know how that's going over there.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of a video game world I'd like to live in, but they all seem so dangerous.
Yeah.
They had bars in the Tron world and Tron Legacy, so that seemed fine, I guess. Sure, you could get scooped up off the street and have to, you know, play in the games for your life or whatever. But
that can happen anywhere.
I mean, surely there were just people going about, you know, medial jobs, right? I don't know.
Yeah.
So I'd go with that. It was very pretty at night.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would live in Roller Coaster Tycoon.
Oh, yeah. That would be a perfect one for you.
As long as I could also be the Roller Coaster Tycoon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you don't even need to be. Like, you could just go to all the different parts. You're only there for a week.
Yeah.
I would throw up a lot.
You can make some. that's all. Part of the game. You have to hire enough janitors to clean up the throw up.
Oh.
Is it?
Yeah.
Huh.
Oh.
Okay.
Because you don't want to make your rides too sick inducing. It's part of the strategy.
Don't speak for me.
All right. Speaking of roller coasters, what's your favorite element in a roller coaster?
This has probably changed over the years since I got older.
Yeah.
Now it's all about I used to really like, because they didn't have launches when we were kids.
Yeah.
Now that's my favorite thing.
The launch.
Super fast. I like the launch.
Yeah.
But when we were kids, it was like, you know, the big roller coaster going up that first lift hill. And oh my God.
The anticipation
and then the immediate payoff.
Yep.
Except there were some of those roller coasters that you went up a big lift hill and then it just went down a little bit and you're all like, oh.
Or does the curve down.
Yeah, that's not as cool.
I don't want that.
There were some at Six Flags when we were kids that had that. And I'm like, that's not cool.
You know, people who are like, oh, these modern roller coasters are so slow or they're so short nowadays. They're remembering where it was like 6 minutes of you going up that hill on the chain.
Yeah.
Click, 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 click.
Yeah, that.
And then the actual roller coaster was 20 seconds.
And you shouldn't count that. I mean, yeah.
The lift hill was always the scariest part for me.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was
absolutely.
Too slow and you just look down and it's just, I don't mind being high if I'm going fast because it's going to be like over really soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that last time I went to Six Flags, I got stuck on a giant lift hill. So oh, I will God. Never be going back.
Yeah, I would say launch currently is my favorite. Yeah. Before that, it would be like a large banking turn. Not like a tight turn, but like a really wide turn, like when you're going really fast. Because I don't know, it feels like you're flying.
Yeah. Mine is still the first drop hill. Love that. Love that sensation of your, you know, your stomach going up in your throat or whatever.
Yeah, especially now that they have ones that are more than 90 degrees down. Like they go in.
Yeah.
Like, I always like a big loop followed up by a smaller loop. So you just two in a row. That was fun.
Yeah. Never been a fan of the loops.
I like them more now that they're not circular, that they're oval. Mm. When I was a kid, they were circular and it was too
jarring.
Yeah.
Rigid.
There's something about them. I don't know. It.
Yeah.
Physics.
It was the physics.
Yes.
Boy, howdy. Do you prefer classic arcade games or modern console games?
Well, it's about the mood, right? I mean,
if you had to pick, one's got to go.
Oh, well then, sorry, modern console games.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. I don't play them that often. You know, I do like one a year.
Yeah.
And so I'm due, actually, again, probably.
Yeah. Star Wars.
Yeah, but Jedi, I don't have that PS5.
Fallen Order 2 or whatever. What's it called?
Jedi.
Survivor.
Survivor. Yeah, he has to do challenges every week to stay on the island. It's just a big crossover with CBS.
Spoiler alert.
You know.
Michael?
Yeah, definitely the arcade games.
You like arcades?
I mean, you know, it's very nostalgic.
Yeah, I would agree. Video games is probably the biggest thing that I'm an old man about. Is there's too many buttons with the modern ones. Like, I don't know how to play.
There really are.
Like, and it's been that way for years for me. Yeah. So, give me some Galaga with this one button and a joystick thing.
Well, even by the end of when we were going to arcades, they started getting, like, you know, Mortal Kombat or whatever had, like, six buttons. I'm like, that's too many. That's too many.
You just slap them all.
Yeah, but that doesn't work. There's always that kid that knew the fatalities and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know where they found out that stuff back then.
There were official magazines that people bought.
I was a subscriber to Nintendo Power in the 80s. So that was fun.
I was too.
I love Super Mario Brothers. I guess that had more than one button, so that was fine.
Yeah.
Two tops.
Yeah.
But that's a modern console.
The NES?
Ish.
Buddy, that was...
I mean, I was
that
hadn't
kid, been modern
so.
In a while.
I mean, I think anything after Atari... is like the modern era of gaming consoles, right?
I don't know. Reagan was president.
Yeah, but it still was,
I'm just saying.
It was the whole thing.
We disliked the Russians for a different reason.
Worlds within worlds.
Star Wars meant a different thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man, it still meant Star Wars. Come on, man.
It meant two things.
It meant two things. And now everybody hates it.
Oh. I would keep console games because I like the new games. Yep. And most of the time, you can get the old arcade games on a console.
Oh, consoles, the new ones?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I thought you were saying you like the older ones.
No.
Which I was surprised.
I do like me some X-Men arcade game and Ninja Turtles arcade game.
I like the graphics of the modern ones better than the old ones, but yeah, it's all about the buttons.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was fun to go around, you know, let's try this, then let's try this one, then we'll do a shooting game, we'll do this game, we'll play a little pinball. I mean, the arcades were fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, see, the best thing about a modern game is all of the, like, old man helper settings that I use. You put it down to easy and turn on the accessibility things where it's like, there was one in Spider-Man Miles Morales that helped you, like, keep up with people that you were chasing, and that was nice. I loved that. So,
yeah.
You can just play through the story and not really worry all that much about the fighting.
Yeah, I don't think I've paid too much attention to the story on the older games.
Pay attention.
Because I didn't have them, really.
Yeah, I didn't really know what was going on with Mario, so I'm excited to see the movie to see what it was actually about.
I mean, the princess got kidnapped by Koopa. Wasn't that the whole thing?
Yeah, but you had to go through, like, different rounds, and there was, like, a thing at the end of each round. And yeah.
Well, in Super Mario Brothers 3, it was easier to figure out because it kept moving.
Yeah, and it had a map.
Yeah.
And
you could fly. It's a raccoon.
Two was a port of a weird Japanese video game.
I mean, and why does the raccoon fly?
I don't know.
Yeah.
The bushy tail.
Big bushy tail. Okay.
Dope.
All right.
When I was the arcade I would go to when I was growing up was called a Barrel of Fun at the mall, and like the entrance to it was like the top of a giant barrel that you'd walk through.
I do feel a little bad for kids today that they don't have the arcade
or the video store.
The video store is a more like teenager thing, like a high schooler thing.
I
don't know.
I had good memories of being like my parents could pick out a movie and I could pick out a movie too. Oh, yeah. But now you can literally watch anything you want at the drop of a hat. I mean, it's not as like, ooh, we got Superman 3 this week. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but sometimes you couldn't get what you wanted to watch.
I know.
It's terrible.
That made the anticipation better. You had to stand around at the Blockbuster and look when people were returning stuff. Like, well,
you first check what they have lined up on the counter.
Exactly.
Because that's where the good stuff is. Mm-hmm.
That's why I worked at Blockbuster, so I could get first dibs.
Get the good stuff.
The good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Like Lethal Weapon 2.
Sure.
I don't know.
Lethal Weapon or
True Lies. That may have been right around that time frame. Okay. Yeah.
All right, that's it for small topics.
Thanks, Jason. Those were some fun small topics. News. Here are three news items to discuss this week about Walt Disney World. Number one, Disney reaches agreement with unions for pay increase to Walt Disney World cast members.
Woohoo!
The Services Trade Council Union, or the STCU, representing 45,000 theme park workers, reached a historic tentative agreement with Walt Disney World to increase the minimum wage from $15 to $18 by the end of the year for full-time workers. An $18 starting wage will move Disney ahead of Universal, which increased its starting wage to $17 earlier this year.
Take that, Universal, you crumb bums.
We got them.
Under this agreement, which is subject to approval by union members, every current theme park worker in the union will receive a raise between $5.50 and $8.60 by the end of the contract, with their total raise of $3 coming by December of 2023. For workers in job classifications that currently earn the minimum of $15, minimum hourly rates will increase to $16 effectively last October, with full back pay to all eligible union workers.
Oh, wow.
Then increase again to $17 upon ratification and $18 this December. So essentially, they'll get like $2 right away.
Yep.
Plus the back pay.
Yeah, the back pay. That's huge.
The agreement also provides 8 weeks of paid child bonding leave, which is a benefit that does not exist in the current contract, and offers increases to many hourly premiums. The minimum rate for current workers will increase to $20.50 by October of 2026, and the minimum rate for workers hired after December 3rd of 2023 will increase to $20 by October of 2026. The union members will vote on the contract Wednesday, March 29th, with all six unions unanimous in their support for the agreement and recommending their members vote to ratify the agreement.
Huh, that's really cool.
So that seems like good news. I'm not a cast member, but it seems like a good thing.
Yeah.
Although I've heard more money, more problems. Is that anything?
Yeah. Disney was charging more money.
Oh, that's the problem.
And they had more problems passing it along.
Maybe
to
that's what
members.
People were meant by that.
Yeah. So that's cool.
Yeah.
Like, and with, you know, there does seem to be some hesitation to raise prices. Too much right now with Iger and co. So
Iger's not eager to raise prices.
He's not. So, you know, that's pretty cool that like, yeah, everything is more expensive. No, they're not going to lower the prices on things, but at least, you know, some of it's going to the cast now.
Yeah.
So that's cool. Big week for unions. The SNL union, like editors union, came to they also got a contract this week.
This podcast is pro union.
You didn't ask for my vote.
Well, are you pro union?
I abstain. That feels like a very union thing to do.
Well, too bad. You're in the union and you have to pay dues.
Oh, man.
enjoy your paid time off and your health care.
I do. Except dental care, which is just a, it's just a coupon. That's all it is. It's not really insurance.
I don't know. Ours is pretty good.
It's fine, but you always have to pay something.
Oh, yeah. We always have to pay something everywhere.
Well, at least they just call it a copay. Yeah. Just to push the papers around.
I don't like when they started calling things co-insurance.
Yeah, see, that's, again, for more insurance talk, please join us on our side podcast, Insure This.
It's a premium podcast. Number two, Walt Disney World to host the world's largest LGBTQ+ conference. According to several outlets, Walt Disney World will host the 2023 Out and Equal Workplace Summit, billed as the largest LGBTQ+ conference in the world. According to the Out and Equal website, the event attracts more than 5,000 attendees annually and brings together executives, professionals, and experts working for LGBTQ+ equality. Over more than 20 years, Summit has become the preferred place to network and share strategies that create inclusive workplaces where everyone belongs and where LGBTQ+ employees can be out and thrive. The event is scheduled from September 11th through September 14th, 2023, and Michael Chamberlain, Chief Marketing Officer for Out and Equal, has confirmed to news outlets that Walt Disney World will be the host venue for both 2023 and 2024.
Oh, wow.
Walt Disney World is a major Out and Equal partner alongside other large organizations, including Apple, Dell, Bank of America, and Uber. And Disney is listed as a titanium partner, the highest level.
Mm.
So that's exciting.
Yeah. A lot of these articles are reading as if Disney is hosting, but Disney is taking the check to have the group host their event at Disney.
Yeah.
Right? So it is nice. It's good that they can make these announcements and stuff, but it's not like a big Disney company F you to the current state of Florida.
No.
Yeah.
But the fact that it'll be there is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And they're a titanium partner.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm most excited about. You don't want to be the gold partner.
Number three, Moana, Mirabel, and Figment meet and greets coming to Walt Disney World. So Disney has confirmed some new meet and greets coming to the parks. Beginning on April 22nd, Moana will greet fellow voyagers on Discovery Island at Disney's Animal Kingdom theme park.
Why bring up Moana? I still have painful memories from last week.
Make way, Will. Just in time for the park's 25th anniversary.
Oh, wow. Old.
Yeah. 1998.
You remember it like yesterday, don't you?
I do.
Yeah. Wait, you were there?
I was. Fans of Figment will get the chance to hug the longtime Epcot icon at the Imagination Pavilion beginning late summer, opening later this year as part of the Epcot transformation. And at Magic Kingdom Park this fall, Mirabel from Walt Disney Animation Studios' hit film Encanto will greet guests in Fairy Tale Gardens surrounded by whimsical decor inspired by La Familia Madrigal.
Nice.
And Fairy Tale Garden is where the Merida meet and greet currently resides, so it's unclear what's going to happen to Merida.
Are they going to kill off Merida?
Gone.
I don't think they have to kill her.
Yeah. Michael, earmuffs.
She goes to the farm.
She gets trampled by a horse.
Now she just hangs out all backstage all day waiting for the parade.
Yeah. She does have a cool float.
Maybe they'll let her ride her horse this time through the parade.
Does she have a float?
I don't know.
Yeah, she's, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
She's at the top and she's like smiling at people.
That's what I thought. All right.
What was the first one again? It was
Moana.
Moana.
Your favorite?
Yeah. She's going to be a real person, I assume. Is Mirabel also going to be a real person, you think?
Yes.
Okay. She is at Disneyland, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Well, actually not good.
Figment, however, will not be a real person.
I hope not.
So I saw the
creepy
first face character Edna Mode was on one of the cruise ships for a Pixar Day at Sea. This is the first time they've ever done a face version of her.
Well, that's good because that the other one is like a giant head.
Yeah.
Like a Stewie head.
I'd like to meet Mirabel, but not if she's a real person.
Why?
Because you know how I feel about those. Real people.
Real people.
You could ask her about her family and maybe she'll sing you that whole song.
Yeah. I don't know. I just never know what to say.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Hello, Rapunzel.
You could ask her if she was...
How are you?
If she was upset that they put all the work into rebuilding the house and then when it was done, the house decided to come back to life and rebuild itself. Like, undo everything they did and rebuild.
Casita.
Yeah. as I would be.
I'm not going to ask her that.
Oh, I did all that work.
I'm not going to ask her.
But that house is definitely a lot safer.
Oh, sure.
With the magic?
With the magic.
Definitely. Oh, yeah.
Like, I saw that episode of The Simpsons where they rebuilt Ned Flanders' house. And anytime I see a poster, that's a load-bearing poster. Don't remember.
You know what I would ask her?
What?
For some more news, because that is it for news.
That was some good news, Michael. Today's topic, attraction spotlight. Tron, Light Cycle, Run. We did it, everybody.
Woohoo!
From the early days of this podcast, we spoke this into existence.
2016, so it's been a while.
It's been many moons.
Been a spell.
It has been a spell. So, in honor of the Magic Kingdom's newest attraction opening next week on April 4th, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. We're going to talk about the development and details about Tron Light Cycle Run, as well as give our reviews from our pass holder preview, which we briefly mentioned in our trip review.
Mm-hmm.
But now we've decided to stretch this out into a whole episode.
Yes.
So get ready for 50 minutes of how much we enjoyed the ride.
So minute one, we get into line. And we talked about, hang on, I got a list here.
We joked that we should have just put microphones on, either in the car on the way down or in the line for this. And that could have been one whole episode.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So we need to get those fancy microphones.
We could one trip, we could do a year's worth of extras.
Yeah. We're not that exciting, though. Michael would have to do a lot of editing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I would have the whole year to do it.
That's true. Done with August, everybody. We just get together to do the news.
Right.
The grid. A digital frontier. I tried to picture clusters of information as they moved through the computer. What did they look like? Ships, motorcycles. Were the circuits like freeways? I kept dreaming of a world I thought I'd never see. And then, one day, I got in.
All right. So let's talk about the ride and the development of it, shall we?
Yeah.
Tron Light Cycle Power Run, which is what it's known as in Shanghai Disneyland, and Tron Light Cycle Run are semi-enclosed launched roller coaster type attractions located at two Walt Disney theme parks. Tron Light Cycle Power Run opened at Shanghai Disneyland on June 16th, 2016. A nearly identical installation, Tron Light Cycle Run, will open on April 4th, as we mentioned, at the Magic Kingdom in Walt Disney World.
Was the Shanghai one an opening day?
Yes.
It was?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
I believe that's true.
All right.
Both are situated within the Tomorrowland-themed areas at each park. The attractions are based on the Tron film franchise and feature a motorbike seat design, which are themed as light cycles from the films. Each coaster reaches a maximum speed of nearly 60 miles per hour, taking riders on a series of twists and turns through a layout that resembles the video game grid depicted in the film series.
How fast is that in kilometers per hour?
I skipped right over that. I'm not doing that.
I think it's 97.
Oh, you don't know that?
That's fast.
If I were to say it was 97 kilometers per hour, everybody would have been like, well, I wonder how many is in miles. And,
you know. Well, we do have our international audience.
Yeah, well.
Do we?
Yeah. Well, and also 100 kilometers per hour seems a lot faster than 60 miles per hour.
Yeah, because it is.
Yeah. Or is it?
I don't know.
Nobody knows.
So while the original film Tron, released in 1982, is the basis for the light cycles, most of the theming and atmosphere are taken from the sequel film Tron Legacy, which was released in 2010.
Which is the best.
Of what?
Of the Tron
of
movies.
The two.
Okay. All right. That's fine. I mean, that's...
It's true.
It's true. Information for this episode comes from Wikipedia, themeparktours.com article, Inside the Grid, the history and future of the Shanghai e-ticket coming to Walt Disney World, and the official Disney site. So, when Tron was released in 1982, it was only a moderate success at the box office, earning a measly $33 million against a $17 million budget. Speaking of forward thinking, Tron was perhaps one of the most visionary films of the decade. At a time when living rooms were still dominated by Atari consoles and kids saved up to play Dig Dug in the arcade after school, Tron imagined what then seemed inconceivable, an entire world inside of a video game.
All right, two things about that. My scrum team at work is called Team Inconceivable, based off of The Princess Bride. And two, did you guys watch Tron when it was, when you were kids, when it came out?
Not when it came out.
Not when it came out.
Later on, I watched it in the 80s at some point.
Yeah, yeah, same here.
I wanted to watch it, but you could only get it on Betamax, and we were a VHS family. And I remember going, speaking of video stores, I remember going to the video store, picking it up, taking it over to my dad, and him saying, we can't get it because it's Betamax. And I was like, I am still disappointed. Like, that is a core memory, my disappointment in that long, skinny video store. Where I didn't get to watch Tron and never got to watch Tron, probably until, you know, way later.
Well, it's like what they say, nobody wins in the format wars.
It's true. Crystals.
Who says that?
Everybody. It's on your t-shirt right now, Will. Nobody wins in the format wars.
So Tron propels Jeff Bridges, Kevin Flynn into a glowing, pulsating digital mainframe called The Grid, populated by programs, which are human likenesses of the game's developers and designers. There he faces off against the digital incarnation of the man who stole his ideas and the imposing MCP, Master Control Program. Alongside freedom fighter Tron, Flynn sets out to free the oppressed programs of the grid. One of its most iconic scenes is a chase across the game grid on virtual light cycles, leaving trails of stretched light behind them as they race dangerously in three dimensions through the virtual world. Unforgettably, Tron was assembled by means of backlit in animation, live action, and cutting-edge computer animation that set a new stylistic standard and made the Dayglo neon film look and feel like something from another planet, unlike anything seen before. Though its initial box office earnings were considered a disappointment, over time, Tron became a bona fide cult hit, winning the Academy Award for Technical Achievement 14 years after its release.
What? How is that? That's shenanigans.
That is shenanigans.
That's shenanigans.
And the winner this year, Tron. Yeah. Jurassic Park guys. What the hell? Come on.
Yeah, let me see. Hang on. You can keep going.
But. Yeah.
You said 14 years?
That would be 1996. So the producers of Star Trek First Contact were very upset.
Would like a word.
That's to say nothing of the world that developed around it, including comic books, video games, and even a World of Tron segment aboard Disneyland's People Mover. That's cool. To really understand Tron's cult appreciation and simmering long-lasting appeal, we have to fast forward 28 years later to 2010's Tron Legacy. Picking up where the first film left off and reuniting much of the cast and crew from 1982, Tron Legacy had a budget literally 10 times larger than its predecessor, $170 million, and earned $400 million at the box office, not to mention the sales of its award-winning soundtrack and score by Daft Punk and its spinoff Tron Uprising animated television series.
Okay, other movies with big technical, or what I would call, have big technical achievements, in 1996, Independence Day.
Mm.
Twister.
Yeah.
The Rock?
I don't think they were up for that. I think it's like a Lifetime Achievement Award type of thing.
Snuck in.
Like, I think it's for like old, like.
I hope it was the ones he's mentioning.
First Contact.
Tron. What? Jeff Bridges is there for Big Lebowski. He's like,
we made it.
Man, that's awesome. Tron Legacy also revived the famed light cycles in a distinctly 21st century arrangement, a new three-dimensional race through a sleek digital world. Disney California Adventure even hosted a nightly street party called Electronica, turning the park's Hollywood Pictures backlot into a glowing neon paradise of lasers, projections, racing light cycles, Flynn's Arcade, and electronic music. Meanwhile, the park's then new World of Color had its own must-see Troncore finale, seemingly hacking, digitizing, and rebooting the park's Paradise Pier. At least momentarily, Tron was back in the spotlight, and there in 2000, And there in 2010, at perhaps the newfound pinnacle of its popularity, Disney executives were hard at work crafting a deal that would open the most elaborate new Disney park since Tokyo Disney Sea. So we're talking about Shanghai Disneyland.
Yes.
When Bob Iger stepped into the CEO role in 2005, he was committed to reversing Eisner's cost-cutting. Under his leadership, Disney began to set its sights to the next level, next frontier, China. Though Michael Eisner had overseen construction of a tiny, underbuilt, underfunded Hong Kong Disneyland, well, that doesn't seem very
fair. You could put it in your pocket.
There's some editorial nonsense going on here. Mainland China was a target for a few very important reasons. As the world's most populated country, China had otherwise been a sort of untapped resource whose extreme censorship had made Disney a relative unknown, which meant a market of more than a billion potential customers. Announced in 2010, right at the height of Tron's newfound popularity, the Shanghai Disney Resort would be one of a kind for a number of reasons. First and foremost, Iger, who was deeply involved with the project and whose legacy would be tied closely to its success, coined the phrase authentically Disney and distinctly Chinese, referring to the resort's classic Disney appeal with accommodations for Chinese culture and tastes. However, this also included Chinese communist sensibilities and censorship. Man, I didn't know we were going to get into this. Okay. After all, the resort is only 43% owned by the Walt Disney Company, with the Shanghai Shendi Group, a government-owned company, controlling with a 57% stake. This is important as one of the agreements was to let China's government even approve the roster of rides, as specifically duplicates of American attractions were allegedly forbidden, given that importing Jungle Cruise, It's a Small World, and Space Mountain would earn claims of American imperialism.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. I guess when we went through Shanghai, there aren't any duplicates? Mm-hmm. There's not a Peter Pan or anything?
Well, I think it's just there's specific one. I think there's a Peter Pan.
Yeah.
I think it's specific ones that promote American imperialism.
So that would be
potentially.
So British imperialism is fine. I mean, they did.
Well, Peter Pan.
They did invent it.
Imperialism?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably why they had a different Pirates of the Caribbean, too.
Yeah. Given that they couldn't rely on classics, designers were tasked with coming up with a slate of new slate of personalized attractions for the park, and when Imagineers are given a blue sky budget and a challenge for originality, they can sure show up. Whatever Disney Parks resort you call home, a few tried and true conventions typically remain about Tomorrowland or its cousin. For example, it's always located on the rightmost path when standing at the park's hub and facing the castle. It's always entered via an avenue of planets or equivalent. It's always got its classics like spinning rockets or saucers, fanciful architecture, retrofitted Star Wars attractions, and of course, Space Mountain looming over it all.
What's the avenue of planets in ours?
The entrance, like that corridor, like when you're walking toward the rockets.
With
Stitch on one side. Yeah.
You mean unnamed wall.
Yeah. Ours isn't called Avenue of Planets.
Okay.
We would fall under the equivalent.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Because we have two entrances.
Yeah.
So anyway, they didn't do that in Shanghai.
Yep. All right.
In fact, this new kind of land has more in common with the namesake of Disney's 2015 Tomorrowland film than with any version of the theme park land to come before. Designed by Imagineer Scott Drake, this Tomorrowland was a major piece of the park's $5.5 billion budget, and to hear Drake himself say it in Fortune, the biggest challenge we had was, how do we tell the story of Tomorrowland in a city that is already the city of the future? The answer, a return to optimism. Tomorrowland is sleek again, but this time it's not in the now nostalgic dressings of a mid-century space race. Tomorrowland has been transformed into a glowing urban oasis, a sleek, glimmering park of glass and grass. Black stepped fountains, twisted steel trellis covered in climbing vines, open pits yielding either rising fountains, vine-covered metal, or billowing fog. Ramps gracefully rise to the land's second story, providing overlooks of hillsides of wildflowers beyond. Paths curving and twisting under the land's signature element, a sprawling, twisting glass canopy. This is the home of the new Space Mountain replacement attraction, Tron Light Cycle Power Run. The glass canopy is an upload circuit beaming this chain of 14 light cycles side by side in 7 rows into the mainframe. Neon hexagons illuminate against the circuit, chasing each train as it twists, dips, and turns along the innards of the structure.
Wait, their canopy's glass?
No, it probably just looks like glass.
Is our canopy glass?
No.
Ours isn't glass, no.
We got hail. We can.
Yeah.
It's Florida.
Hail.
The Shanghai Disneyland ride debuted with much acclaim along with the rest of the park on June 16th, 2016. So there's your background. Let's talk about the attraction itself. The storyline is pretty straightforward. Here's Disney's marketing description. Climb aboard your own light cycle before entering the grid. As you're part of Team Blue, you'll compete against villainous Team Orange to be the first to race through 8 energy gates in a dark, computerized world. Leave the real world behind and join Team Blue in a quest across the grid, the dark, computerized world with no horizons from Tron. Here, there's no limit to the excitement.
Good marketing speak.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go to the attraction itself, and let's note that the original attraction, Tron Light Cycle Power Run, is nearly identical to the new one at Walt Disney World, Tron Light Cycle No Power Run.
Yeah, it's Tron Light Cycle Slash Run. There's like slash everywhere.
Oh, weird.
Which I don't know why.
The it's interesting or ironic that Shanghai couldn't have any ports of American attractions, but we sure did say, all right, we're bringing that stuff back.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. Bring that over here.
Yep.
All right. And spoilers from here on, by the way, if anybody doesn't want to hear anything about the attraction, because there are a few surprises in there.
And, big surprises.
Twists and turns. Like, even.
Shocking.
I mean, we knew about the twists and turns because you could just see those.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Yeah.
Just that one.
Just a big twist. One big turn. The interior queue begins in a darkened hallway of pulsing lights before guests are led into a very small pre-show room facing glowing floor-to-ceiling display panels. Their clouded, translucent surfaces pulse in flipping hexagons and glowing blue until, with a burst, the screen becomes instantly transparent. It's an almost unbelievable effect. Unbeknownst to us, we've been on a balcony all along, overlooking the launch area where a train of light cycles at once blasts away beneath us. A new portal opens up to the catwalks encircling this neon loading area, leading successive hallways through the dark digital world of Tron.
Yeah, this was awesome. Shocking. It was shocking and awesome because you really are just kind of pushed into a tiny room, and there's no like video or anything. There's no cast member in there. Yeah. You're just like, what are we supposed to do now? And then suddenly the wall disappears.
Yeah, there was some sort of animation going on the screen,
yeah.
But I can't remember if there was any like dialogue.
I think it was like we're digitizing you or something.
But even like that part was cool. But then like it's like a secret door opens up and it's like, oh,
yeah.
Now we go.
Yeah,
this
it was
way.
Like right behind me.
Yeah,
I remember Tyler pointed, hey, go that way. Oh, yeah, all yeah. Right, that's cool. I imagine it will probably be a little different when it's everything seemed kind of weird when going through the for the preview because we weren't. We didn't wait inside at all.
Right.
Like we did all of our waiting outside. So I don't know. Yeah. I'm imagining there's going to be a cast member filling up that room.
I would think so. Yeah.
So, and we also went through the lockers before this, which they don't have at Shanghai.
Correct.
So we'll talk about that in our review a little bit at the end. So pay attention for the end. For most Disney Parks guests, it's almost certain that the light cycles are unlike anything they've experienced before. Well, I don't know.
Anything you've ever experienced.
I mean, I've been on a bicycle.
And a roller coaster.
Yeah. Did it grab you by your calves? And
well, no, but I've been on Flight of Passage. It was pretty similar. But it did not grab me by the calves. Guests straddle the light cycle like a real motorcycle, kneeling against a leg restraint and leaning forward. As the train readies for upload, a ray-shaped restraint rises from behind, pressing against riders' backs and calves to hold them securely in the unique configuration. Of note to fans of Tron, this restraint also equips each rider with a glowing identity disc ring.
Yeah, that's a really cool touch, is that you get your identity disc when you get in the thing. It is. They do have a one of those seats outside. So you can test it out. But, you know, Will and I are bigger dudes and we didn't have a problem with it. So
as the soft electronic score of Tron by Daft Punk and Joseph Trapanese begins, the train of light cycles are swiftly and smoothly propelled out of the load station, heading off into the darkness. As flashing blue arrows guide our train forward, it turns in the darkness and aligns with the launch area we've seen from overhead. Only now we're the ones about to be propelled through the grid. As the score picks up and the symmetrical chamber begins to pulse, tensions rise until finally the light cycles are electrified. The ride blasts from 0 to 60 miles per hour, making it the fastest Disney roller coaster at the time. Guardians of the Galaxy Cosmic Rewind has now beat its speed by about 1 mile per hour.
Take that, Tron.
It practically smashes out of the building, and once leaping over a pedestrian path and up an 80-foot arc into the heights of the upload circuit, the sound of humming electrical motors and bleeps and bloops as it twists and sails over the crowds beneath. This is very descriptive.
It is.
The train levels out high up into the canopy and enters a darkened tunnel into a show building. Passing under a recognizer, it dives into the grid, a digital pulsating world of shapes and sounds. Like the iconic race from Tron, our blue light cycles will be pitted against an orange nemesis here in the computer world. The train sails sideways down a drop, twisting through glowing neon obstacles with one of the ride's most clever tricks. The orange train appears far away to the left, though its path is on course to intersect ours. At once, we plummet and it matches us inch for inch. At the last second before collision, we each helix away from each other. This harrowing encounter, a true standout, is in fact achieved by our own train momentarily blacking out with the left wheels turning orange as we pass a mirror. Well,
yeah, that's pretty cool.
That's cool.
Like, that's very clever.
It's always mirrors.
Yeah, it's always mirrors.
So much with the mirror.
There are a few like projection screens there too.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So there are screens, but the one where you, like, it's cool because you're always going to be, you know, neck and neck with another train, unlike some of the like dueling coasters, like your Matterhorns or your whatever, where sometimes you get in alignment and it's cool and there's like near misses, and then, but most of the time you don't.
The train accelerates away, racing through progressive scenes as it twists through the darkness. The orange cycle comes into view again, this time brought to life via projection technology in an enveloped curved tunnel. They speed ahead and try to race into our path, but our train leaps over the deadly trail of orange light left behind like a game of snake. We're propelled into another projection tunnel just as the orange light cycles lose control, smashing to digital bits and falling around us via fragmented mirrors. Always mirrors. A tunnel of pulsing circuits signals our deceleration as the world around us powers down. The trains continue ahead in darkness and silence for a moment until their triumphant blue hue returns, illuminating a final victorious hall of mirrors.
So many mirrors.
Love mirrors.
As the light cycles return to an unload area, our journey through the world of Tron is finished. Except for the post-show. Which was not that exciting.
What's the post-show?
That was that green.
The green.
Enterprise green. Rent-a-con.
Oh, yeah. Should be sponsored by Windex with all those mirrors. Am I right? Windex presents Tron Psychic Football.
No power.
I've been digitized.
So a few stats. It goes up to 78.1 feet. The length is 3,169 feet. Speed is 59.3 miles per hour. Let's just even it up to 60.
Yeah.
It lasts just over a minute, and the height requirement is 48 inches. But the most exciting about the whole thing are probably the ride vehicles, right?
These are really cool. Yeah.
They're entirely different from any coaster, as Walt Disney Imagineering created these motorbike-styled vehicles focusing on individual rider experience. Riders sit on a motorbike-style seat and lean forward. They are then locked into place via a back restraint and a calf restraint. If you're unsure of the fit of the vehicle, test seats are available outside the attraction. While the unique vehicle seems like it would have a limiting fit on the chest-waist area, it seems most guests who have trouble fitting on the light cycle experienced issues with the calf restraint not securing into place, and that the back restraint wasn't a problem.
Yeah, it's really not a calf restraint, right? Like, it goes over your calves and hooks behind your knees. And I think where people have problems are their calves are too big that bar can't get behind their knees. Like, it can't get over their calves. But it's not like, I thought it was going to hold you in by your calves. Like, I thought there was going to be some sort of...
Just a guy back there.
Yeah. Like...
I got you, dog.
Almost like Flight of Passage. Like, it has those calf things that come up behind your leg. So that's what I was expecting, but it's actually a bar. So I saw a YouTube video of... somebody like demonstrating how he gets in, and basically he points his toe and puts it all the way back, and sort of leans all the way forward, and then that deflates his calf enough that he can get the bar over it. So
yeah, because the back restraint isn't actually a restraint. Like, you can sit straight up. Yeah. Like, it'll move with you. I like the flight of passage one, which kind of holds you, like, in position. Yeah. So the back one, like, has complete give. So it's not really holding you.
Yeah. So it's really your, if you have large or super muscular calves, it's just getting over the calves, get the bars over the calves. We did also see, and I didn't think about this, you know, because a lot of people are, Disney is known for being able to accommodate most everybody, size wise. But with this sort of system, we did see an older couple. They had to get off to go into the upright seat because they just couldn't, like, mounting the.
Yeah, they couldn't straddle it.
Yeah, like it was just, it was, that was difficult. So I think, you will see a lot more of that, and I think Disney's probably pretty good about being discreet or being sensitive about that kind of stuff. But something that surprised me was people, not only larger people or people with large calves, really, but also people with who, you know, have more mobility problems or mild mobility problems may have a problem getting on too.
Well, like we talked about, there is an alternative ride vehicle that is available on some of the coaster trains, but the problem is it's not on every train. So you may have a little bit more of a wait if you need to ride that one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was on all of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because they asked us, well, me, I was in the lead. Like, would any of you mind riding in the upright seat? And I was like,
no.
I'd prefer not. I said it nicely. I was like, I think we'd prefer not to. And she looked miffed for a second, but then we got on. It was fine. So, because of the unique ride vehicle, this is the first Walt Disney World attraction that requires loose items to be stored in a locker. Free lockers are available and must be used for anything larger than a phone. To open the lockers, you'll need to tap your park ticket or magic band. And in case neither are available, temporary locker tickets are available from a cast member. Huh. For your phone and wallet or sunglasses, there is a small compartment on board the vehicle, and it would fit quite a few things, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not big, but it's kind of deep.
Yeah, I would be very worried, especially for me, just knowing myself, that I would leave. Like, I would absolutely forget whatever's in that.
And the lockers were so awesome and easy.
So awesome. Yeah.
Like, just tap that magic band. And there are hundreds and hundreds of them, too.
Yeah, and so, like, it's what? One, you know, you get rid of your stuff, and then you're almost immediately in the load area. So you're not without your phone for very much if you put your phone in there.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, then you have another 30 minutes where you're just bored and have to talk to the people that you came with.
Yeah.
But what's cool about the lockers are there are hundreds of them. And so you pick one, you put your stuff in, you go get on the roller coaster, and then you walk by the other side of those that same bank of lockers, and they have doors on both sides. So when you're coming out, you walk right past the lockers that you put your stuff into so you can get it out.
Like, yeah,
that's just...
So you're not, like, getting in the way of people that are starting to use the lockers. Also, if you forget your locker number, if you scan your Magic Banner ticket at the little computer thing, it'll tell you what number locker you have.
I didn't know that part.
Yeah. As a theme park operations enthusiast, like that's just a really cool example of how Disney thinks through things, thinks through the operational side of things and the crowd control side and the sort of forcing you along a path and keeping you going, keeping you doing what they want you to do without it being super, you know, somebody standing out there screaming like put your crap in a locker. Like, here's Universal. Your lockers. Yeah, exactly.
And at Universal, you have to go through a metal detector and they make sure you put everything in a locker.
Oh, wow.
Some of these. Yeah, it was a little militant.
Yeah.
And it was
a little more intense though.
It wasn't as convenient either. You had to go back into the lockers. It was before you like get in the queue.
Oh, yeah.
On some of these. So it was like, oh, this sucks.
Yeah.
But remember, was it just you and I, Michael, that were in the back and we heard
that lady?
Yes. This is just the other side of the locker. I'm like, that's cool. Good for her. That was awesome.
She is a theme park operations enthusiast as well.
Her mind was blown.
All right. So the Magic Kingdom version was first announced at the D23 Expo on July 15th, 2017, as part of the unveiling of 23 improvements to Disney parks, including 4 new rides across the theme parks. The ride's construction began in February of 2018 with land clearing. It was originally scheduled to open for the Walt Disney World 50th anniversary in fall of 2021, but due to the outbreak of the COVID-19 pandemic, the opening date had to be postponed. On September 11th, 2022, it was announced at the D23 Expo that the Tron Light Cycle Run attraction was scheduled to be open by spring 2023 as part of the Disney 100 Years of Wonder celebration. On January 10th, 2023, it was announced that the Magic Kingdom Coaster would open on April 4th.
Woohoo!
And they're still on track to open on April 4th.
Yeah, I mean, they're ready now.
Yeah, aren't they doing like...
They're doing soft opening. It's just open for most of the day. And in fact, I read yesterday, it's going into the night now. Like they're just pretty much open.
I wonder if
standby line?
No.
No, virtual queue and virtual, individual. Yeah. I wonder if, unlike other virtual queues, more people will go for the afternoon virtual queue.
I bet they will.
To try to get the evening rides.
Yeah.
What they should do, it'll anger a lot of people, but what they should do is it'll be on an individual lightning lane. They should charge more for
nighttime
rides. And they also should be more strict about coming back anytime throughout the day. Cause like in Guardians, if you miss your virtual queue check-in, they're pretty much cool with you going for the rest of the day at any point. But like if people start doing that with Light Cycle Run, then it'll just be the last 2 hours of the night will always be people being like, oh, I missed my appointment by 16 hours. Can I go now?
No, but have a magical day. Yeah. Similar to Shanghai, the attraction is located in Tomorrowland. But unlike Shanghai, Tron Light Cycle Run complements Space Mountain instead of serving as a replacement. It's situated behind the Tomorrowland Speedway and to the left of Space Mountain. There are two entry points to the attraction, one from Tomorrowland next to the Tomorrowland Launch Depot gift shop, which was formerly called Tomorrowland Light and Power Company, and another from the back of Storybook Circus in Fantasyland in between the railroad station and Goofy's Barnstormer. In addition to the attraction itself, the area also consists of a new set of bathrooms and a snack cart.
Ooh.
Since it's sponsored by Enterprise Rent-A-Car, the post-show includes a Team Green light cycle for photo ops as guests exit the attraction. And I think it opened the day we were there.
Actually. Yeah.
And we didn't care.
Yeah.
We were just saying how cool
it was. I took
a
picture of it. Yeah. I made it a photo op.
Yeah. Speaking of photo ops,
can you rent a car there? Like you can buy a car at...
You can buy the light cycle.
Tron Fast Test Track.
Flo Rida had one, I believe. The attraction also includes some unique photo pass opportunities, including photos, videos, and a prop, which is the identity disc. And the on-ride photo and video available in the My Disney Experience app appears to occur on the initial launch. There's also identity photo pass prop, like I said, which will be available outside Tron Light Cycle Run beginning April 4th. A magic shot with a floating identity disc will also be available.
Ooh, where you're like reaching up to it. Oh man, I need to get one of those.
As we previously discussed, this attraction will have a virtual queue and an individual lightning lane purchase option. A standby queue is currently not available. And it is pretty much open at this point. So if you're down there before April 4th, you can, you know, go as normal on the virtual queue like you would Guardians right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's exciting.
So, Tron, do you like it?
The movie?
No. I mean, I know the answer to that. The answer is no. The original Tron. And Tron Legacy is fine.
Yeah. Tron Legacy is fine.
My favorite part of both movies are the light cycle sequences. So I definitely like the attraction being based on
I like the design.
Of what?
Yep.
The attraction?
Oh, I mean, the movies. It's fine. But the attraction, my God.
I like that Jeff Bridges is just playing the dude and everything now.
The grid.
Yeah. No, man. He's just a big hippie.
The only thing I didn't like about this whole thing was how much we had to stand outside and how long we had to stand outside for that preview.
Yeah, the outside queue, it looks like, is maybe the overflow queue.
It looked like it because for us, there was no queue inside. So usually the inside will be full.
Yeah.
So I wonder how much, like, standby line they'll actually be, not standby, but how much the virtual queue or lightning lane line outside will be.
Yeah. I doubt it's going to be that long. It'll probably be like imagine. It is at Guardians because it rarely goes outside.
Right.
Yeah.
When it does, I mean, it happens, but they have like umbrellas and stuff
there. And both of them will move pretty quick, especially since they have two trains.
Yeah.
Or two loading platforms.
But we started off at right next to Tomorrowland Indy Speedway. So it was like one of those COVID lines, actually.
Yeah,
it really,
really
was.
Went all the way.
But it did not. Close. It did not.
it didn't move like that.
Move then, like that.
No,
but so once you get into the entrance, like where the the arch is to actually get into line for the ride, and you get into the actual line for the ride, you're outside. But they have, even for Disney fans, amazing fans like out there.
Oh, so, like the ceiling fans.
Yeah, they were huge in. It was like a 70-degree difference between when you're in the fan and not in the fan. Not really. There's no difference in the temperature. It just felt a lot cooler. But
And depending on where the sun is during the day, you may be in the shade or you may not be in the shade.
Yeah.
Because it's covered. Most of that area, whole area is covered by the canopy. There's some parts that aren't covered. But for the queue itself, most of it was covered, except if the sun is like, low enough. It may be pretty hot.
Yeah. Yeah, but past that, when you get into the queue stuff, like it
feels like the future.
It really does. It's really, really cool. There's a bunch of like kind of wow. Like almost like Rise of the Resistance walking out into the hangar bay. Wow. Mm-hmm. Or Guardians, the spoiler alert for Guardians. Skip ahead 30 seconds. The teleporting, like that kind of wow. Like the Tron, when those screens disappear, like that is super neat. Awesome.
And a little side thing. They had where they zapped us into the grid, they had that big looking thing outside before you go inside. So every once in a while it would zap and the color thing would change. And then every once in a while we were under that canopy so long it turned orange and then the ominous music would hit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we were under that canopy for a long time and it was very pretty.
Yeah.
And the music was awesome. And like watching the coasters launch, it was really a good vibe over there. There's going to be a lot of people taking pictures there all the time.
Yeah. And even if you don't ride it at night, you can just walk over there at any time and stand under the canopy and, watch the trains or get pictures or whatever. Mm-hmm. Even now it's soft open, they're letting anyone just walk over there. So you don't necessarily have to ride it at night to be able to experience it at night.
Yeah. And it's really only that the launch return under the canopy that would be any different day versus night. Because the start of the launch is dark, it's inside, and then the entirety of the ride is, or the main part of the ride is all inside. So it is a dark ride. So it's not a huge difference between night and day.
Yeah.
That was funny.
Yeah. But really cool. I liked the, something that I really liked and it reminded me of, an arcade, was, you're going through the gates, like, the races through the gates. And just like any racing game.
It just looked really cool on the inside.
Yeah. Any racing game that you've ever played, you have to get to the next gate in a certain amount of time or your game's over. So I just thought that was a cool, like that really felt like you were really in a video game.
And everything looked dimensional, unlike Rock and Roller Coaster, where you can tell it's like cardboard cutouts that are lit up.
Yep.
Like, this had a completely different feel, and it was super smooth. Like,
it felt full in there, in the inside part.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was smooth. Like, you weren't jostled around a lot, which was nice.
Yeah.
Rock and Roller Coaster probably used to be a little smoother.
I hope so.
It's certainly not now.
No. Now there's Space Mountain.
Yeah.
Yeah, Will and we did Michael not recommend rode Space Mountain right after riding Rock and Roller Coaster, and I've never seen them more like disappointed or complain more about Space Mountain. Like,
we've been spoiled by Guardians and Tron now.
Yeah.
Putting Tron right next to Space Mountain was probably not a great
idea. Hey, but if you love Space Mountain, the wait time should be lower.
Yeah.
Maybe this will get them to upgrade the track like they did at Disneyland. Yeah. Then it'll be smooth.
I hope so.
Yeah, me too. They also had a sign in there to like really warn you about loose articles. So there must be some kind of, you know, more company-wide thing going on about loose articles.
Or something happened
that
we're not privy to.
But yeah, I mean, honestly,
it was so fun.
The launch alone was awesome.
Yeah, it felt more intense than other launches.
When you were under the canopy?
Yeah.
Intense.
Oh, yeah.
Intense. Because it's a camping pun.
Tense.
Yeah, thank you.
But yeah, it was. It felt intense. And I don't know if it's just the fact that you were in like a prone position or like a bike position or whatever that made it feel like you were going super fast.
That was part of it, probably.
Versus sitting. I don't know. I wouldn't mind trying it in the regular seat down the line.
I bet it's still fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've seen people that done online that say, you know, fun.
So my one complaint is the grips.
That was going to be my complaint, too.
Like,
oh, yeah. They're like
need a little rubber on there.
Metal and spiky.
Yeah. Almost. And, you know, you're holding on to what it feels like for dear life.
Yeah.
You know, you probably don't need to at all, obviously.
No, I've seen some fun photo ops of people going like this through the launch.
Like
stuff,
what?
Where they have like their hands up and like they're
Titanicking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like you definitely don't have to hold on. Like they got you in there by your feet or your legs or your calves.
You're secure.
So,
yeah.
You're in there.
But we were holding on.
You're wedged in.
Yeah. First time probably holding on because you just don't know what to expect.
That's my literally only complaint. Yeah. I do not think it was too short.
Yeah, I thought it was fine.
Yeah, it's about the same. It's about the same as Rock and Roller Coaster.
Yeah,
lengthwise.
Yeah, almost identical.
And honestly, with twists and turns and a lot of like Guardians is longer, but it's a whole thing. You know,
yeah.
Like, but it's also not just a roller coaster. This is a roller coaster.
Yeah, this is a roller coaster.
And roller coasters don't need to be that long. And that makes me sound like an old man, but like, there's only so much you need.
Yeah. This. So, I thought it was a good length. I probably, like, it would have been fun up to maybe 30 seconds longer. But after that, I think it would be kind of done with it. But
unless it did something completely different.
Yeah, this didn't feel short to me. The roller coasters at Dollywood, we went to Dollywood, like at a non-Disney theme park. Those were really short. Like, those were up the lift and then around and you're out. Like, that's it.
Now, compared to the Universal roller coasters, their roller coasters are exceptionally long.
Yep.
So I could see if you're used to that and you ride this, you know, there might be some disappointment that it's over already. But, you know, those are more intense roller coasters anyway. So they're completely different kind of experience.
Yeah. And, you know, they're outside.
Yeah.
They have more room. They have to air condition this roller coaster.
That's true.
Not trying to air condition Florida, guys. Nope.
Doors. Best thing ever for me.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
100% agreed.
Even if I could never ride it again, just having it there in Tomorrowland, I think, is a plus.
Yeah.
It's pretty.
It looks cool.
Yeah.
It looks like it fits over there.
Mm-hmm.
If we could just tear out Tomorrowland Indy Speedway, like put something else there, anything else.
Or
there?
Just make that futuristic too somehow. Yeah.
They
put some neon on that thing.
Yeah.
They funneled us out.
Make those light
not
cycles.
Through where the, I guess, the gift shop's going to be.
Yeah, we went through Storybook.
We went through, like, it dumped us out next to
Barnstormer.
Like, it was, that was the longest.
Yeah.
Please let us out of here.
But yeah, anything else to add? We had a great time. Can't wait to ride it again, personally.
Yeah.
All right.
So, again, as a theme park operations enthusiast, the coolest thing about the load was the it had a separate queue for the front seat of the train, but it was with the other queue. So if you were like, I would like to ride in the front, most of the rides, they make you like stand over to the side or get behind them or whatever. There is a line, another line that goes to the queue for the front of the car. So they can put the whole line there. So, you know, if you want to ride in the front, they have a mechanism for you to do it. There's no like difference to the cast member if they're putting you in lane two or lane one. Just if you're in lane one, you're going to have to wait for however many people are in front of you in lane one.
So also,
that was really cool.
It's also the first time I've ever loaded onto a roller coaster where you where if you're sitting on the right hand side, you step over the track.
Yeah.
And they have it like completely covered part of the train, but it felt like I was breaking a rule by stepping onto the other side and then loading that way. And the same thing when you get off.
And they called us programs.
Oh yeah, they did.
A couple times. So that was neat.
Yeah.
So if you've been on Tron Light Cycle Power Run or Tron Light Cycle Run or have watched Tron or Tron Legacy, why don't you email us at info@tfppodcast.com. You can also find us on Instagram and Reddit @TFPpodcast or on Twitter @TFP_podcast. Please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite podcatcher. Buy a t-shirt over at shop.tfppodcast.com. And why don't you join Patreon? We have some exclusive Patreon-only content that's available to you if you support the show on patreon.com/TFPpodcast. Thanks for listening. We'll see you real soon.
Bye-bye, game over.